Welcome to the 183rd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome, and thanks for listening. Well, we're 2 weeks past Chattanooga Ironman. My toenail that left the building is my toes feeling better. Kept me out of the pool for a week, so I went back to the pool today. Only to have a master swim workout that involved a fair amount of sprinting. So it was good. Try to turn from a diesel to a gas engine. So it was good to feel. I felt good in the water. So that was good. Since we didn't get to swim in Ironman Chattanooga, I got my swim in today. So I guess the whole thing is now complete. Back to training. The next race for me is going to be California International Marathon in Sacramento. That's in December. So a little bit of run training focus, back to the weight training, to try to get strong for the hills there in Sacramento. It's a net downhill race, but, still hilly for us flatlanders. So, you know, I take from a race what I'd like to what went good, what went bad, and make things a little bit better. And I definitely think the strength training helped me recover. I recovered much quicker from this race than I have recovered from any other race, as far as Ironmans go. And, you know, I think there's places that I can use this to get stronger. I'm going to use the strength work to help with a little speed, help with, again, the hills, and just to keep from and keep healthy in general. So that's good. And I'm going to keep swimming, because, you know, we'll continue to have events that involve swimming, and biking. So we'll keep those going and like them both. Everything's a little bit different. So it's nice to, see the sun come up from the pool perspective, as well as the running perspective. The evenings are starting to cool down here a little bit in Florida, so it means that vegetable growing season is on the horizon. So we have a few tomatoes gone and peppers gone and some herbs. So the game plan is to get more things growing, have some eggplant going. So that kind of takes care of that. Today I wanted to talk a little bit about disconnects. You know, a lot of times we say things and we don't hear ourselves talking, or sometimes we say things and then as we're talking, we actually hear what we say, and it, you know, it becomes somewhat confusing about what we're saying and what we're thinking and what we mean. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about that. You know, in class, we talked about, you know, how do you respond to people when, you know, they're not, or they don't agree with you as far as plant-based lifestyle. And, you know, some arguments are, you know, fairly well thought of and can catch you off guard a little bit. And it seems like as plant-based eaters, you know, we always feel that we need to, you know, have our defense ready, you know, of how to answer things. And, you know, when you start to stumble a little bit, people kind of get the, I told you so. It's not the right thing to do. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of those things. I was listening to another podcast, and I heard someone talk about plant-based nutrition being vegan and with regards to athletics. And, you know, we've talked about marathon running in here and, you know, in recovering from athletic endurance and, you know, how the inflammation is so much less when you take animal products and dairy out. But the comment was that it's not a natural diet. It's not the way we evolved. And then another comment that was made in the same podcast was, well, I change my training or my training of individuals to bring out the max. So we tweak it all the time. So we don't stay with what was. We keep evolving in our training. And I thought to myself, it's kind of funny if you evolve in your training, but when you look to nutrition, you're looking back, you know, even back as far as, you know, whether it's a Paleolithic period or back in the old days, what people ate, you know, so it doesn't kind of go together. If you're, you know, you want to be progressive and be the best that you can in training, then we also need to look at the nutritional aspect of things. And the other thing that came about was, you know, this moderation aspect of, well, if people ate in moderation, then they could eat what they wanted. the same thing goes. If someone is training and they want to be elite and they're doing, you know, extreme, they're not training in moderation. They're trying to push themselves to the max to be the best that they can. So then why do you turn back and look at food being moderation? And, you know, where some athletes, you know, wrestlers and a lot of gymnasts, you know, are very good at restricting their calories. And, you know, they spend a lifetime of monitoring their caloric intake and keeping it down low. And, you know, everything is very black and white. And so sometimes those people can actually do, you know, a moderation in their intake. On the other hand, if someone is, an athlete that has been training hard also requires a lot of calories. So if you take all those, you know, say it's 3,000 calories a day for, an athlete, and where are you going to get those calories, and how much of those calories are going to generate inflammation versus how many of those calories are actually going to help you? You know, we know meat has protein, and, you know, we need protein to build muscle, but there's protein in vegetables as well, but we don't have the harmful side effects and the inflammatory components that go with the meat and the added hormones and growth factors that we don't necessarily want to have, as well as some of the amino acids that cause more damage or inflammation. So you have to think of both things. If you're going to have to eat more, then it's better to eat more of things that can help you in all ways, not that, you know, you have to eat other things to make up for the other things that you eat, because your body has to try to heal itself from the workload, and it also has to try to heal itself from the inflammation that you ingested. So I found that as an interesting disconnect. And, you know, of course, the same person also talked about, you know, having stomach issues and, you know, what, you know, but didn't really see the connection of the root cause of the stomach issues being, you know, trying to process some of these high protein meals. It was kind of funny because the interviewer wasn't prepared for some of the answers as well. And, you know, one of the comebacks was, well, I really couldn't do this if I didn't have a wife that cooked for me and that was dedicated to helping me. And I thought that was a pretty poor excuse, and perhaps somewhat sexist, in that, you know, most people that have high functioning positions can, you know, should be able to feed themselves. And if something is really important for you, you take the time to do it right. So if you're managing a business and you take the time to, you know, make everything that it's such, you know, everything is so, and you pay attention to detail. Well, you're part of the business. You may be the CEO of the business, or the director or the leader of the business. So if you don't take your health serious, then, you know, it's just another aspect of your business. You need to be healthy in order to run your business the best that you can. And not having somebody to cook for you is really not a reason to not be healthy. Because it, you know, there may come a time in everybody's life, you may be fortunate enough to have someone that likes to cook, but that person may get sick or ill. So that doesn't mean that the ship should sink and that everybody's going to eat poorly because the cook's not available. So everybody needs to be cross-trained a little bit. It doesn't necessarily have to be fancy or gourmet meals, but just because you don't have someone to cook for you is not a reason to eat poorly. You know, again, make it very simple. You know, in nutrition class, we talk about, you know, potatoes and beans in a salad. You know, they don't require simple foods, like they come out of the ground, don't require a whole lot of cooking. You know, beans and rice, bunch of different vegetables. It's pretty easy. And, you know, most people like to play around in the kitchen a little bit and experiment with food. So that's really not a reason for not being plant-based. I'm the director of cardiac rehab in my town, and so I review patients' charts that have had bypass and stents placed that have been referred by their physician for cardiac rehab. And, you know, they have various exercises that they go through and evaluations, and they have a dietary intake, and their goals are assessed. And so I see a lot of people come in. Obviously, they had to have you know, they have vascular disease, they have coronary artery disease, that's why they had the procedure. So, you know, they're, which is the result of, you know, lifestyle changes, including their eating, and they want to get healthy. And they're typically all on, it's very rare to see somebody on less than five medications when they come out of the hospital. So obviously that's a part. Most, 75% of people are diabetic that have, the stents and the bypass surgeries. So you have, you know, those are part of the medications. And, you know, they're coming to rehab 3 days a week and doing, you know, trying to get stronger that way. I do a lecture once a month. It's free. That's, you know, very near the hospital. They just need to walk in the door. And this week, only four people showed up, you know, out of, you know, 25 or 30 people that are in cardiac rehab at any one time. And, you know, there's such a disconnect between, you know, what people are eating. And every time, you know, the four people that did show up were shocked that, you know, their food choices had something to do with what happened to them, and that their food choices also influence how well they're going to heal. But the fact that only four showed up is, you know, a little disheartening, that people want to get better, but they just, there's just this disconnect still that their nutrition actually is going to impede their overall health and well-being. They just don't, you know, want to see that aspect. People are willing to go to exercise for an hour a day that's supervised, but they still don't want to necessarily change their eating. And when they do, they want to change it ever so slightly. You know, add on to it, you know, one of the members talked about his son likes what his father was doing. His father's, you know, plant-based, reversing his diabetes and his blood pressure. And he's like, well, I'm going to eat more vegetables, but I'm still going to eat my chicken and I'm still going to eat my cheese. So if you look at the spectrum of, so what did he actually give up? Where is he closer to being whole food plant-based with no oil, sugar, salt, or is he closer to eating the standard American diet? And to me, I liken that to somebody that's, you know, they want to learn to swim, but they don't want to let go of the side of the pool. By hanging on to these other things, they're really close to where they were, but they just stuck their foot in the water a little bit. And yes, that's good, and hopefully they'll continue to advance. But it's when you just do that little bit, you're just getting that little bit of benefit, and you're always ready to say, "See, it didn't work. I tried this, and I just couldn't do it. It was too hard." And they have one arm on the side of the pool already, and so it doesn't take much for them to go back to where they were. As opposed to if you can get closer to the other end, you have a better chance at hanging on long term, because you start to see some really good changes early on, and it, you know, can spur you to learn more and to feel better and to keep going. It's flu season, and you know, all the drugstores, you know, advertise about getting flu shots. There's always controversy on the internet. Get a flu shot, don't get a flu shot. A lot of hospitals require people that work there to get a flu shot because of, you know, somebody got the flu that be less, you know, they infect other people, or perhaps there'd be more work days if they got the flu. Work days lost if they got the flu. But the reality is that the flu shot's about 20% effective at best. And last year, it was reported between the flu and pneumonia, there were about 80,000 deaths from the flu, which is more than in 2012 and 13 when there was about 56,000 deaths reported. And if you compare that to heart disease, where there's 650,000 deaths a year, it doesn't get near the attention. So something that's 20% effective, everybody's lining up for, even though there's some side effects to it. But if we were to adopt, if these people that have heart disease, or everybody that were to adopt a plant-based diet, and we could, you know, 50, 60, 70% decrease in cardiovascular events, that's much better than the flu shot. Yet it's looked at as so much more radical, and people don't think it has near the chance, and they're not willing to take the chance that this actually may make things so much better. And of course, there's no risk to it. So there's this social disconnect. It's okay to get the flu shot that may not work, but it's not okay to become plant-based, because if it doesn't work, then I've actually, I've given up something that's near and dear to my heart. Which brings me to another thing that people say is, well, I'd rather eat what I want and not live as long than to have to eat this, plant-based food that I don't like the taste of. Well, the problem is with that, and the quote came from someone that one of those meals was to go get a Subway meatball sandwich. So, if that's what you're willing to give up some of the years of your life for, is a processed meatball sub from us, with all the chemicals and ingredient. And if that's what you got, that's, you're certainly giving up a lot to get a little. And the reality of it is there's never been a person that I've seen in the emergency room, and I've been a physician since 1987, that's come to the emergency room nearing death saying, thank God, I'm going to die. I'm going to get to die now. Nobody wants to die when it's their time to die. Most people would like as many years as they can get. It's only the people that feel very healthy at the time that say they're not afraid to die, or that or they don't care whether they have excessive amounts of years. And, it all comes down to the perspective that you look at as far as time. Jesse Itzler, who wrote a good book called Living with a Monk that I really like. He talks about, in the years that you have left, how many things are there to do? You have so many birthdays. You only have one birthday a year. If you only live 10 years, you get 10 more birthdays, or 5 years, 5 more birthdays, 10 more Christmases. Maybe you only see your family four times a year. Maybe you only see them once a year. It could be only 10 more times in your life that you would see your family. Those are huge numbers. And if you could add any more time onto that, most people would take it. If you look at the number, if you take about 20 minutes to eat a day, three times a day, you spend about an hour a day, 365 days a year, so that you eat about 15 days out of a year, if you looked at all the total hours. So for 15 days, you're saying that those 15 days are worth so much more than the life that you would get if you ate more healthy. So it's kind of a disconnect. We don't think about it. A lot of people, I've said it before, they love what they eat. They couldn't give up these things, but yet they eat them while they're driving. They eat them while they're watching TV. They don't remember. It takes 10 minutes. So it's more of the concept of being able to choose what they want to eat rather than the food itself. So it's almost this concept of having to change and having to eat something someone told me was healthy is a worse deal than actually what they have now. I'm pretty sure if someone was given a meatball hoagie from Subway versus, 6 months of life, they would take the 6 month of life over the meatball hoagie. But that's never how we think about it. We think about the here and now, and that risk of six more months is not really a reality. My answer to the athlete is, how does meat actually affect performance? Your body runs on glucose. So the glucose is in the cleaner the fuel, the quicker you can get it into your muscle is what's going to affect performance. And we know from studies on athletes that if you infuse fat, they become glucose intolerant, whether it's fat ingested orally or IV. So the ability to get glucose into the muscle is decreased, so that their performance is going to be decreased. If you look at look at the calories per day, and if some of those calories are coming from inflammatory fats and metabolites and associated chemicals and heavy metals, the inflammation that that's going to cause is going to decrease performance. Only antioxidants and phytonutrients come from plants, so that you need the plants to be able to recover from the workouts and the competitions. So it only makes sense that performance would be enhanced by plant-based nutrition. If the argument was, well, I can't get enough calories in, it takes too long to eat all those calories, of course there's ways to do it. David Carter, the 300-pound vegan, you know, or the, you know, weightlifters that have to eat a lot of calories that are vegan, potatoes, oats, rice, the starches added to these vegetables, there's plenty of protein in these things, the beans, obviously. So, and most of these guys like to eat anyway. So if they're put in foods in ways that people like the taste of, I don't think they'll have any trouble getting the calories down. You know, I think it comes back to what is easy and not thinking outside the box. They invest their time in training and time in preparation and time to detail with regards to these things. But yet, when you get to that piece of nutrition, people don't want to invest the time in it. And we talked about in class today, you know, the disconnect. How do you get people to see that their nutrition actually affects their not only their athletic performance, but their overall general health and well-being? We know people don't do as well from the flu if they're compromised. Well, you're going to be compromised if you're unhealthy from lifestyle diseases. So you have, you know, you're already sick, and then, you know, it just makes things worse. If you were healthy and got the flu, it wouldn't be near as bad as if you're sick and got the flu. So how do you get the disconnect to people? And one person, you know, suggested that when they hear personal stories from people and how they've suffered and you know, from disease and recover. And, you know, I think that's good. It gives people that have a similar disease hope if they knew that by changing their diet. You know, this is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and it drives me insane to, you know, hear everybody talking about early detection and get your mammogram. And I heard somebody tell me today that, you know, it's the first person in their family to have breast cancer and they're going to do a bilateral mastectomy. And I was like, why? And thinking that if you take both breasts off, it's going to make things better. There's no data for that. But there is some data that show that it, you know, by what we choose to eat can help accelerate these tumors or help us heal, whether you do traditional chemotherapy and eat better or you do, or not, and you just do the lumpectomy and eat better, you still have a much, much better chance. And you can take it all the way back into adolescence. There's evidence with young girls that if they exercise and they eat healthy, their chances of breast cancer as they become adult women is much less. So, you know, we need to focus on this, especially during breast cancer awareness. How do we prevent disease? Taking dairy away from little girls is going to decrease their estrogen exposure and help them tremendously. You know, introducing cruciferous vegetables to children in various ways that they like is going to help them tremendously. Having people learn to exercise and love to be outside and, you know, to move their bodies is going to be a lifelong love that's going to help them over time. We know that women that exercise do better both premenopausal breast cancer and postmenopausal breast cancer. We know that people that exercise and stopped don't get the benefit, so you have to keep exercising. People that are getting chemotherapy do better if they exercise. People that are doing chemotherapy that eat well do better because of the inflammation, and they have a better chance as far as recovering from the chemotherapy. We also know that exercise during chemotherapy makes people more likely not to have or recover from the cardiomyopathies associated with chemotherapy. Those are things we should be talking about, not just early detection. The numbers or the percentage of decrease in mortality from breast cancer is largely because we have more people living with cancer. It's just diagnosed early. The time to death for the total time from tumor has not changed significantly. So the idea is to not make these tiny little tumors, these specks, grow. as opposed to try to figure out what to do when somebody's already sick. Today in class, we made a dish called cowboy caviar, and it's black beans, black-eyed peas, red and green peppers, a jalapeno pepper, cilantro, onion, tomatoes, lime juice, cumin, chili pepper, some hot pepper sauce. So it's spicy. You could eat this cold. We ate it cold as a salad. You could put it on a baked potato. It really will increase the calories and the calorie density of it once you do that. You could put it over greens as well, especially if you're trying to get your greens over a big bed of spinach or kale. So this is a really quick and easy meal. You could literally open up cans of beans and rinse them and do it that way and just chop up a few vegetables. You know, you could make enough that it'll last a couple days. You could take it in your lunch. You could wrap it in a corn tortilla. So there's so many things that you can do for it. It's such an easy recipe and so nutritious that, you know, kids could take it for lunch. Again, it's just finding a few little things that you can make that takes things outside of the box. And it's also pretty to look at. So you could take it as a great thing to take to a potluck. That way, if you went to a potluck, you have something substantial to eat. A lot of times if people take, you know, just a light salad or something, then that's all they have. And it's like, all I had to eat was a salad. But, you know, this way it gives you the beans and you could even throw rice in it and make it, you know, more calorie dense. So just, you know, just by coming up with those, you know, you can feed kids in their lunch, feed teenagers. You know, it wouldn't be a bad, you know, snack in the afternoon before practice. So, you know, that's just a great thing to have on hand. The other thing is sliced fruit, you know, to have the fruit already sliced up. If the apple's already sliced, more people are likely to eat it. When we were at the conference a month or so ago, the only fruit that they had was, you know, whole green apples and bananas and then some hard looking peaches, you know, and everything was just, you know, stacked up, the whole fruit. It's not near as appetizing. You know, one, you're at a conference and how are you going to, you know, going to crunch an apple or you can't cut it up. The juice is going to run all over the place. But if the fruit was chopped up, then people are much more likely to grab it and or to throw it on their oatmeal. So, you know, if you have fruit around for kids, make sure you have it cut up so that they, you know, they have plenty of fruit to snack on. You know, a gentleman in the class said that, you know, his grandkids go to a school and it's a private school and they say they don't have to prepare vegan meals for them. Most people don't know what vegan meals are, and most of the food that comes into schools aren't very good anyway, so they'd probably mess that up as well. So that's when you take the, you know, the balls in your court. You take your own lunch. You know, you prepare the lunch for the kids. You know, with any luck, you know, other kids, it may catch on. You have the opportunity as a parent to bring in healthy snacks and show them what's available, because people just need to learn to think outside the box. Once they know what to put in kids' meals and kids' lunch, they might be more likely to do it. I think it's great that more football players are coming out being plant-based, because they're certainly the modern-day gladiators. They're some of the biggest athletes, so if they can fuel their body for their football games, then just about anybody can for a soccer game or a tennis match or you know, an amateur whatever. So I think that's really good, especially for the youth, to see that athletes are looking to nutrition to make themselves better. They're obviously getting in enough calories and they're getting in enough protein, because these, again, are highly paid athletes that are big guys, and they're doing just great. So these are examples that we have to continue to show people. And, you know, I think the biggest bang for your buck is to get rid of dairy, as far as the inflammation in the muscles and the joints and the bones, all forms, because if you just expose yourself to a little bit of dairy, you can get your immune system triggered for, you know, a week or 10 days, and then something else triggers it. So that's certainly the first thing to you know, to kind of eliminate completely. And then, you know, start introducing the other grains and beans into the diet, and potatoes, and back off on the meat portions, make them condiments, and then get rid of them completely. But, you know, there's just no, no denying that there'll be less inflammation athletically if you can give up the animal products completely. So I challenge you to listen to yourself. You know, I think listening and listen to other people when they talk, because you start to hear the disconnects. You know, I hear things like, I don't know why I'm overweight. I don't have a big appetite. I hardly eat anything at all. And then I'll hear from the same person, if given the opportunity, I could eat a whole bag of potato chips or a whole loaf of bread. So obviously there's a disconnect there. I didn't eat anything except what was marked down, but I had a bite of this or a bite of that. Or I thought that this would not, if eating this would not be as bad as what I would usually eat. So, you know, we make deals with ourselves. You know, it deals with the devil, so to speak. You know, it's better having, you know, four dates than a piece of cake. Yes, but no, depending on what your goals are. And so I think that we have to listen to the disconnect that other people speak, as well as the disconnects that we have ourselves, and, you know, try to look and see what we're really after. And if you're starting on your plant-based journey and you're still holding on to the wall, then why are you holding on to the wall? Are you just doing this so that you can, you know, again, say it doesn't work? Because, you know, it's a self-defeating, if you don't think it will, chances are you'll find some way to sabotage it. I can guarantee that it will help you if you, you know, you go full in and try to, you know, swim to the side where it's whole fruits and vegetables and give up the oil and the salt. So you have to, you know, again, at least have a plan. If you're going to give up things slowly, then make your own timeline and make your own calendar for when things go away. You know, have a game plan, whether it's adding a meal in a week, or eliminating portion sizes. It's usually a way to go with animal products. But again, you get the most bang for your buck if you, you know, jump all the way in the water and learn to swim. You know, most people tell you that, you know, they really didn't learn to swim until they were able to let go of the side. So, you know, listen to yourself and see what your excuses are and see if they're really valid. Is it worth 15 days of eating Subway meatball sandwiches to keep your feet permanently planted in the carnivore world? You know, you may not be afraid of dying now, but are you, maybe you won't die. Maybe, you know, we have a lot of ways to keep people alive a long time, you know, that includes pain and suffering. So, you know, we don't have control of those things. So it's better not to go down those roads of lifestyle disease. So, you know, nobody believes that you're that brave, that you don't care when you go. And I hope that that's not true, because then there are other issues that you need to talk to somebody about. But most people want as many days as they can. And, you know, I'd like to, you know, and it's all our perspective and our story. And, I'd like to leave you with one of the best things that I heard this week from a 95-year-old lady that said she enjoyed every day. She enjoyed going to the gym. She goes to the gym twice a week. She enjoys seeing her friends every day and talking. And she enjoys a martini with her other with her friends every evening. And they sit around and talk. And she enjoys her cats. And she loves life. And she's not ready to go. So that would be my wish for you, that you love life and you're not ready to go and you're willing to eat so that you can have the best life possible with the least amount of inflammation and the least amount of pain and suffering. And I'm convinced that that's a whole food plant-based diet, pretty close to how it comes out of the ground. So eat colorful, eat your fruit, get out and move your body, get some sunshine, and I'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.